I don't like to say I believe in astrology. I cannot say that. Doesn't like doesn't sit right. But beliefs based upon observation and repeated exposure to those patterns, and also choosing to believe the teachings. But it's always given with teachings are always given with test it out. You know, there's a lot of posting of this transit and that transit, and now it's a full moon and this and that sign, but how many people actually go out and directly experience that instead of it becoming a mental fabrication and a story of, oh my God, it's this and that, and that is the pseudoscience, maybe when we take a concept and we make it a belief and therefore we're experiencing that. Whereas I think the Indian tradition of direct experience of being a yogi and testing it out and having one's own realization is way more important than taking on someone else's beliefs.
This is Cosmic Cocktails, a colorful space where we mix and match Ayurveda, Vedic astrology, and dream yoga to test how we can best navigate through all tastes of life, even the bitter. From sacred mantras and saturnal remedies to planetary outfits and karmic breakups. Welcome, Shivananda. It is an absolute honor, and we're very excited to welcome you in our cosmic studio today, in our podcast, because we can finally introduce you to our listeners and share some of your infinite wisdom, even though that we know that you will always say you're just a student and you're just scratching the surface. And that is what we also really like about you. You're so humble. You're so loyal and true to your lineage. You can hear it in the storytelling, the way that you teach. So we're very, very grateful that we're able to learn from you. So we don't actually know where to start because we have so many questions for you, as always. But you always seem to know or to have an answer to almost any question, whether it's deciding the timing to plan a sabbatical or navigating through heartbreak or difficult moments in our lives, you always help us to decipher the information that we can find in our birth chart. And you so beautifully help us understand that deeper and deeper each and every time. And you keep reminding us that we sometimes need to use a bigger discernment than just logic, that we need to test things out for ourselves too and to learn from direct experience. And we hope that we can inspire our listeners to do that too today, and also to finally let our listeners meet our guru, our amazing Jyotish teacher, Shivananda. So the first question is, can you share something about your story, how you ended up from the West, from Norway, in Bali, but also how you moved literally and figuratively, right, from the West to the East?
In retrospect, I think through astrology, I even understand my own journey even deeper. So Rahu as Atma Karaka. Be drawn to something that's far away, something that's foreign, something that is seemingly at odds with tradition, culture, religion, etc. I grew up in Norway, and my family was very close to nature. That's one of the beautiful message I got from my mother, was that her father was very spiritual. He would go into nature to pray. So that was kind of a foundation I grew up with. We spent a lot of time in nature. Every summer, every winter.
Whereabouts in Norway did you live?
So I was born in Bergen, but grew up in Oslo.
Okay, yeah.
And yeah, so we would travel all around. And it's kind of strange to say, but I think I had some really big insights just walking in nature with my family, and it becomes a meditation. Just being On the road, traveling from cabin to cabin in the forest, in the mountains. So it was always like nature was kind of like the religion or the dharma, the ninth house that I got from my tradition. But growing up in what is, a Christian country, that was part of education. We actually had, religious study in elementary school and high school, and I did not get the answers I was looking for. It was always like this, what is this story? What does this mean?
Were there like
And
the
I,
questions about life?
sorry.
What kind of questions did you?
Yeah, because it was supposed to be, guiding religious classes. I went to regular government school, but back then part of the curriculum was, now I think it's way more broad. Now they probably teach all kinds of religion and maybe even philosophy, I would hope. So we would learn certain things about Christianity that was part of the culture. Like, we celebrate Christmas, right? But in Norwegian we say Yule. So there's something different than the English Christmas. Anyway, so that was like the background. And when I became a teenager, of course, the Rahu Rebel years, etc., I was into skateboarding and became very much influenced by the punk rock music. That was part of the skateboard culture, right? So listening to that and finding that there's a genre, a type of punk rock music that was actually very positive. Straight edge music that is like people who actually go against the grain. So again, long backstory, the culture of very, tough American street culture, skateboarding, and people who actually rebelled against being those rebels. They went the other way. It's like, no, we don't want this violence. We don't want to drink. We want to be a straight edge, meaning that they refrain from they're kind of like rebelling against the rebels almost. So the music influenced me. It was very positive, very uplifting. And then that took me to the next level, which became what they call Krishna core. Krishna core. From hardcore to straight edge hardcore to Krishna core. My first introduction to mantras, to Sanskrit, was actually through punk rock music.
Can you remember?
Bands like.
That's very Rahu, this move.
It's so out of the ordinary, right?
So extreme.
And it was the message in those lyrics. It was the message of a lot of insights and about life and positivity. And yeah, so bands like Shelter, another band called 108, or Inside
108.
Out. Yeah,
108. They had malas.
they were chanting. You can look them up, Shelter, 108, Inside Out. Some of those core, this is like way back in the 80s, some of those members founded bigger bands like Rage Against the Machine, etc. So that whole scene, yeah. So certain individuals, there's even a famous astrologer now on YouTube. He was one of the, I think he played bass in 108. Or now he's a Sanskrit scholar and astrologer as well.
Wow, that's
Who
super
is it, Simon?
interesting. No, Vikti Chhara. He's the, yeah. He's teaching a lot about nakshatras, etc. So, yeah, so there was a whole movement of the punk rock scene that got influenced by the ISKCON movement, the Hare Krishnas. Yeah, so they started to include some of the teachings actually in their lyrics, in their songs. Yeah. So I was introduced to that music in the 90s. And yeah, and then of course, the first time I met, the Hare Krishnas, they're sitting on the streets and chanting. And it was just a click like, wow, that's you guys. So I found actually that in Norway, there was a small temple and they were teaching Bhagavad Gita classes on Sundays and having kirtans and prasad. So I started to follow that community back in the 90s. I never fully became part of it. I had good friends who were in there. And I did learn a lot. I got introduced to my first book in Ayurveda from their library, etc. Yeah, and then I searched for other places. I found the ISKCON movement. They have the Maha Mantra, Hare Krishna Mantra. And then I found Ananda Marg, which was the only other. This is back in the 90s. There was really no yoga studio in Norway. There was no way to find much of that. But there was Ananda Marg. They were teaching yoga. So I took my first yoga class with them, got introduced, got initiated into a tantric meditation. It was so powerful and painful sitting for hours with this yogi teacher. Yeah, blew my mind. So that's the beginning in Norway, and quickly nothing was left for me to study in Norway. So I started traveling, and eventually found that I wanted to study Ayurveda deeper. And that took me to the States, and that opened up so many doors. Yeah.
Yeah, because you studied with Dr. Lett, right?
Yeah, that was the move I made in the late 90s. You know, some of the best decisions are almost like synchronicity out of a whim is just like go. But for me, it's that, you know, going abroad, going foreign, making that jump over to the States and to go to that school and study with him was a huge turning point in my life and opened up so many doors. That's where I picked up the first book on Jyotisha, Light on Life by Hartley Fowe, and got introduced to me. I took a class with Svoboda, and it was a community there of David Frawley, Svoboda, Hartley Fowe, Dr. Ladd, and other teachers.
Wow, you were like part of the real crew.
Yeah.
The OGs.
It was back in the day, and the Ayurvedic Institute really expanded from there. They had already been in New Mexico for quite some time, so they had been in Santa Fe for a while, and now when I got there, I think they had been like probably 2, 3 years in Albuquerque, and then that center really started to boom, and yeah.
Because back in the days, I guess in that time, Ayurveda was really something like almost weird or very,
Yeah.
exotic.
Yeah. Even yoga was a little bit like it wasn't commercial. It was slowly starting to creep in. And at the end of the 90s, beginning 2000, that's when it really boomed and yoga studios were popping up. And now, a few years later, then Ayurveda was kind of like following the yoga. And now Jyotisha is coming in quite strongly. So more and more people are introduced to,
Yeah.
yeah.
So,
Maybe the next will be Vastu. Who knows?
yeah. Well, you never know, right? It all follows up each other. Yeah. So, what was it about Ayurveda that really interested you or grabbed your attention?
Nature. That was a really like a profound understanding of nature. So it was like almost like from the foundation of nature into studying some of the philosophy, right? And the practices, and then it brought it down to the five elements again of natural healing, etc. So, yeah.
And what did it teach you about yourself?
Great question. What did Ayurveda teach me? The integration of yoga with Ayurveda was profound. Yeah. So, I had studied yoga more in a spiritual sense with Ananda Marg, and that was quite deep and profound. But that, yeah, integration of the body, of spirituality, how deep, how what I love about Ayurveda is how simple it can be. It can be so simple, you learn about three doshas and you can start to navigate your life through that. And also how profound it can be. You know, that is, yeah.
And then what brought you to Jyotish? Because at one point you switched from Ayurveda to Jyotish, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was introduced to Jyotisha in that environment, but honestly, it didn't make any sense to me.
Well, I remember the first time I opened the book Light on Life when I told you I want to know more. Do you have a book or something? And I opened it. I was like, this is a whole new language. I don't understand anything of this. Yeah. And not even the Sanskrit, because that is a different language, but just the whole. study of light.
Yeah, it's a profound book. It's not that big, but it's very dense and very compact, and it is like a text one needs to unlock with support and teaching. And so, yeah, so I tried also to read it by myself, but it was just made no sense. or maybe I was too dense to understand it, we could say.
Right.
So it wasn't a conscious shift per se. I was still interested in Ayurveda, and I was still pursuing yoga, spirituality, Ayurveda. More as for me, I've never wanted to be a doctor. I could never see myself as someone who's taken on that as an educator. So that's what I do more with Ayurveda. Still, I still carry that with me in certain situations, like teacher trainings, etc., or workshops where I teach the basics, teach some alignments. So it wasn't a conscious choice of changing direction. They're sister sciences, so they all go together. And I like to dabble, like jack of all trades, this and this and this. And over time, I realized I had, dabbled a lot in specifically Jyotisha. So it became more and more natural to use that with clients.
But it needs a lot of grasping power to understand both sciences, right? Like, it's huge.
It takes lifetimes. It takes lifetimes.
Lifetimes, yeah. Yeah.
In which one are we now?
but the beauty of it is that it can be, just like Ayurveda, one can get certain foundations and apply them already, and it gives a deep alignment, right? So for me, it was always about alignment. Alignment to nature, that is Ayurveda. Alignment to something greater, that is Jyotisha. So, yeah.
And it's also what we really love, that it are sister sciences, because a lot of people don't know that yoga and Jyotish and Ayurveda are based on the same principles and the same Vedic texts. And also, in our experience, it just gives another layer, another layer, another layer to even understand it better if you study all three of them. Yeah.
Is that also where your famous line comes from? You better align with nature before nature aligns with you.
I cannot take credit for that one. That comes from Robert Svoboda, and he credits it to his teacher.
I
might modify it sometimes a little bit, paraphrasing it, but that is from Vimalananda. That is
It's very powerful.
It's very powerful. And in Heart to Forward, my first Jyotisha teacher, he would say it is like that's where magic happens, when how much self power do we have? But can we align to these larger cycles? Can we trust the wave of energy that comes our way and ride that energy? Mm-hmm. And the same thing in Ayurveda. We have Dinacharya, we have Ritu Charana, so aligning to seasons, right? How much support is there? So trusting one's constitution, one's vehicle, one's chart, and understanding here's a cycle that's coming. Can we best align to this nature instead of it fighting against it and being crushed, right? So Heart to Forward had a really cool way of saying that. He said, sometimes this energy, this karma is so strong, it's like a tsunami that comes your way.
Wow.
And can you imagine how far you can go if you can surf that, right? But the other side is you're standing there in your boat and you're fighting against that tsunami. And the only thing you can do is actually spit back at it, right? You're making all your effort and you spit at the tsunami. And what have you actually done by doing that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You actually made the tsunami this much greater, right? You added a bit of water that's just going to come on top of you.
So when was your last tsunami? When did you last felt that wave of energy that you were able to surf?
Wow. So there's always a wave. There's always transits and dashas and buktis. And for sure, if we look at this global event of the pandemic, right? If you look at the situation, the astrology from December 24, 2019, it's a huge wave, quite a negative one. So it's not always that it's the holy waters that come. Sometimes it is
There are the
confusion, fear,
Scorpio
and darkness.
waters.
Yeah. Dark, deep waters that are wow. So actually, I like transits and these, like, there's a lot of focus on the line about astrology and people doing like forecasting next month this and that. I was never that much into that, to be honest. For me, astrology was always about self-understanding. But definitely that 2019 December and the events that came after that, that put me into more interest in the transits. So the other side of, you know, waves are the dasha and buktis. Dasha is the longer time cycles and buktis are the shorter. And yeah, that is ongoing. That is like every time it shifts, there is a different one. But yeah, it's a good question. But there's multiple like time cycles in my life where things just have clicked, and it's usually easier to see it in retrospect. That's the joke in astrology, that prediction is very difficult, especially for future events.
Yeah.
But
Well, you're pretty good at it, so.
learning by looking into the past and seeing what was going on there, right? Like learning and seeing the patterns, reverse engineering and seeing what we have gone through and understanding that, so we can, yeah, learn from it. And indeed, then it's easier to predict the future.
Because who reads your chart? Do you also have a teacher that does
Yeah,
read for you?
absolutely, absolutely. There's some people who say, you know, it's best to find one good astrologer and stick with that and go deep. And I can appreciate that. It is, you know, if you build that connection, that is very useful. It's, you know, in a certain way, there's eight limbs of astrology, right? One is called graha, and that has maybe to do a little bit what we think of as psychology in this day and age. Things that grab us. And indeed, planets are called grahas, so they grab us. So if you have a good integrated holistic astrologer who can support on an understanding both the psychology, the client, and I think it's very useful in, you know, for Western people to understand our own psychology, then I think it's very good to have one specific. But I guess I still, you know, like to run around and search here and there. So I've seen a lot of astrologers. I used to travel to remote villages in India because I heard about this astrologer there and that astrologer there. So I still seek out different people. I do. Not so much anymore, but there are times it's good, like get a review and yeah. But I don't look at my chart that much anymore. The chart is already memorized, but it's not like I. There are certain things, certain cycles, then I will contact some of my teachers, maybe.
So when was your first actual reading that you saw the chart, your own blueprint?
That was back in the end of the 90s at Ayurvedic Institute with Hartifo.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, long time ago. And just to finish that one, some people say it's best to follow one and, you know, have continuous. And I think that's very useful, but it's also something to be said for if you have a severe condition, you might want to seek different experts and get multiple opinions. And especially as a student myself too, I want to see how do certain people see the same patterns, the same chart, but how do they create the story from that chart? And that's something that's also cultural. So for instance, I can go to an astrologer in India and they like remote village where not many Westerners come through, and they don't fully understand maybe the culture and the environment that I grew up in. So then the usefulness of knowing a bit about my chart, I will ask, what do you mean by that? What pattern? How do you find that in the chart? And then I might have to modify certain things. Yeah, Hartifo gave me a reading, and he later became my teacher, my first teacher. Yeah, he said stuff that I didn't know about even from past in my family, that I later went back to Norway and checked. This like, yeah, that was true. So that blew my mind. Yeah.
I always tell people that I didn't believe in astrology until you read my chart. And then I was like, this is more than coincidence, or yeah, it was amazing. You also gave me a fact about, someone in my mother line reading the Bhagavad Gita. And I was like, why? Because they're all Christians. So I cannot imagine someone having read the Bhagavad Gita. And then I got home and I told my cousin, and then he told me that my grandma had the Bhagavad Gita and that he had it and he was going to give it to me because, yeah, that was insane. I was like, okay, now I want to know more about this. Yeah.
Yeah, it's strange. I'm believing in something. I don't like to say I believe in astrology. I cannot say that. It's like, doesn't sit right. But there's a type of trust and in patterns and things, coincidence. What is that? Things are coinciding. I don't know if the word in English believe. Maybe I've choose certain beliefs based upon observation and repeated exposure to those patterns, and also choosing to believe the teachings. But it's always given with teachings are always given with test it out. Right. So again, Hartefo, his way of teaching of Shraddha, which is faith, but it's not blind faith, it's informed faith. So it comes with a tradition and it comes with the recommendation of test it out, see if this works. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's both for Jyotish and Ayurveda very important. Like, you can give all the remedies and the advices, but still this person has to find out for him or herself whether it works and how the body responds and your connection with nature or the universe. And yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that is a bit of like the black and white mindset is like either it's true or either it's false.
Yeah.
But that has never been that tradition. There's always room for experimentation and to accept that something should be absolutely working 100% or not is quite, would we apply that to, we try to apply it to modern Western science, but there's, or even medicine, but there is a place where it becomes, a science and art, and anyone who studied any, be it financial investment or be it medicine or law or anything, they come to a place where, actually, there's a term for that. I forget what it's called. Most people who know very little, they have a high confidence. But when you study a lot, there's like a drop of confidence. So when people don't know so much about it, they expect it's like either it has to work 100% or it's false. But if you go deep in it, you see that, yeah, it probably works 85% of the time. That is enough to make it a type of science.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So it's something that is a bit frustrating to see that on Wikipedia, Ayurveda is considered to be a pseudoscience.
Mm-hmm.
If you look it up, I think it's still there. Like Wikipedia is a collaboration, mostly of Western people, I would assume. And who knows how much they studied, but I assume not much. They apply their scientific lens and look quickly into, here are some people talking about elements and doshas. And no, it's a pseudoscience from that perspective, right?
That's also something that you taught us so beautifully. It's like, what's your perspective and through which filter and which lens are you looking? Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a whole different meaning to something. So how did you decide, or when did you decide to teach Jyotish?
You're asking, I don't have any point. I think being an educator, so being someone who's seeing clients and supporting one-on-one, there is a part of education already there. So I think I would start with, one-on-one clients, and then that naturally developed to smaller workshops and sitting with friends who are also students, but they don't know certain things that I knew, and sharing. So I don't even remember. Like small workshops is how I started, but it's a while ago. The first online program was a few years ago. That was during the pandemic, of course. That shifted everything, right? So from teaching at the Yoga Barn here in Bali. A lot of people coming through and doing smaller workshops. The difficulty is, of course, that people don't stay for a long time. So it becomes, introduction over and over. So during the COVID, that was a shift to do online and do longer programs when, yeah.
Yeah. Just for the timeline, like how long are you already in these sciences? Because we're talking about 20 years, 25 years or so, right? Like Ayurveda,
Yeah, I'm getting old.
Jyotish.
I think I heard my first mantras as a young teenager. So, yeah, mid-90s. More. So I'm like jack of all trades. I would start with Heart to Foe 2001, more serious. When I studied with him until what, 2010-ish, I think. And then I got lucky enough to be accepted into a program with Sanjay Rath in India. That was what, 2014, I think. No, 2015, maybe. Yeah. For being an astrologer, practicing astrology, I'm really bad at timekeeping.
It's in the seconds, in the
Maybe you remember the dashas,
I'm just maybe I'm just getting old. I'm in a jack of all trades. It's not like I had some fellow students like with Heart to Foe who just that's all they did, and my God, they got very, very faster than me. I'm slow and steady, I think. It's a lifetime or lifetimes for me. Yeah.
But are you like a nighttime studier, like going into the hours of like deep in the
I
night?
used to be. I used to be. Yeah, I used to be a night owl. Yeah, not anymore.
Not very
No, but there's a deep, researcher, the nutty professor, the crazy professor that's up all night having.
Ayurvedic.
But there's a lot to be said for. But now it's shifted. Now it's shifted. Now it might be, and a lot of astrology is about meditation on certain concepts, and then things click. And we see the patterns. So yeah, the deeper parts of the mind. But thank God it's shifted now. Now I go to bed early and.
Well, we have that too. Then we say to each other, yeah, we go to bed early today, and then 10 o'clock in the evening we're like, well, what would this person's chart look like? And then we start Googling, and then we put it in our Facebook group, and then we're like, oh my God, here we go again. It's like an obsession.
It is an obsession.
Yeah,
It's
I
an
mean, a
obsession. good dose of Rahu really helps.
Yeah, you always say like, choose your obsessions.
Yeah, it's so
Well,
fascinating.
you know that from Ayurveda, right? That second fire that comes in the evening time, and the mind is switching on, and it is a yeah, it's a science of light. We need fire for it. And
Yeah. Well, we have lots of
We have too much
that. Too
fire.
much fire.
Yeah, but it brings fun as well. And I think from my experience, Ayurveda and Jyotish is just something that clicks, that grasps you, like, wow, this is so fascinating, and it makes so much sense. Really, almost magical. Like, it's hard to explain why, but it just keeps you going. That's how I experience it.
That's why we
Absolutely.
can't stop talking about it.
Yeah.
So here's the
Yeah. Yeah.
Jyotish Vidya, the deity of light that takes over and then it sparks and sharing these, I think it's one of the great thing of being both like an educator type, right? So both maybe in a class or one-on-one with a client to see when things click. Right, we get the insights, and I really think that is like the joy of seeing the spark of maybe new pathways that are forming and click. Oh yeah, and it's a flow, and it really is. I've seen that with some of my teachers in India too, where they're giving a lecture to common people or amateur astrologers, and the insights. And the group of people that are like, ah, they're sitting on the edge of their chairs learning about something, and the lecture is over, and yeah, my teacher there sometimes he goes off stage and there's like 50 people rushing up to talk to him because they need more, they want more, they get
It's almost like an addiction. Well, we also experience that always when we have one of your classes, and usually we're together.
we just need some time. We go to a coffee place and then we just need to digest all the information. And then we're all hyped up and talking really, about it. And people are looking at us like, what's going on with these
really
two?
Really coming back to earth.
We need to come back to earth again. Yeah. We really need to ground ourselves again because we are like, it's like you are in a different world with each other, you know, with the
different language.
Fellow students. It's different language and it's, yeah, endlessly. I find it endlessly fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, I think one of the things that I really enjoy and also really appreciate from your teachings, and I think it's very important part of Jyotish, Ayurveda as well, but mainly Jyotish, is the storytelling.
Yeah.
You can see all the patterns and the karmas and everything in the chart, but how are you translating this to the person? Like you, there must be some good storytelling and what to tell and how to tell it. And
also how to translate it into modern day life. You know, that's what we just appreciated when you then pull up Snoop Dogg's chart. We're like, okay.
But how did you learn this language and how to talk to people in this way? Like how to explain it? I mean, Heart of Fowl obviously is a great teacher for that, I think.
But. Yeah, I think he was the one that indeed gave that. So my current teacher, Pandit Sanjay Rath, and his wife, Sarbanis Rath, they are from really true traditions. And at the same time, I'm Western and most of my clients are, you know, Western, and it's very hard to give as deep of a reading as maybe they can. So the bridge there has been indeed people like Heart of Fowl, who are, his teacher was Indian, etc., who are bridging it into a modern context. And that was a big part of his training too, was to be able to recognize who you're talking to. And in fact, that is one of his teaching, is to like give a new narrative. You know, what is the story they have, and to give a narrative that they can use, that they can see themselves in. So he was quite good at that of bridging and like having to think about, if this is a Catholic client, how do we translate what comes from, you know, a Hindu system, so to speak, and what saints and archangels can we recommend based upon the chart? Mm. We don't want to change someone's religion or their beliefs, but can we support them in the same way, with the same unlocking, the same connection to these planets that can support them?
Yeah, because you get a lot of clients that maybe never heard about mantras or mudras. Yeah, not everyone is coming from the yoga Ayurveda scene. So,
or if you give them remedy with like food, people are like, what? I need to eat something different because of the moment I was born. How does this work?
Black tea for Saturn, like why, you know?
Yeah, or I need to skip my chai on Saturday to create a connection with Saturn, like okay, back off, I'm taking this away from myself. Can be very esoteric for people, right?
Yeah. How to make it practical, how to make it modern, and you know, that's still a journey, how to stay as much as I can true to the tradition, but finding new ways, finding new remedies. And I think Heart of Fowl, he was very good at that. Yeah, I had a friend and she got an upaya of learning to throw knives.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did it have something to do with Mars or?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow. Yeah, that must be Mars.
Yeah. So you've done a lot of readings, right?
Over the years, it's become more and more, yeah.
What is the most asked question during readings?
I think I'm quite lucky. Most of my clients are people who want to know themselves. I think people find in a certain way what they're looking for. And it's natural. You know, if someone wants to develop a business, they might not come to me. I get business people too, but they might go to people who specialize in that. So I usually get people who want to understand themselves, actually, who wants to find alignment to their own nature. At least that's the way I'd like to see it. But having said that, I think what Hartifov said still holds true, that majority of it is marriage, children, and work and income. That is the cornerstones of life, right? Those are important and somewhat skewed, that most females will ask about family and marriage, and most guys will ask about work and money. That's Mars and Venus.
Mars and Venus, always the
Yeah.
dance. It's
Yeah.
really true. But I mean, it's also a lot, like things like marriage and children can be very delicate, can be very sensitive information. So,
Absolutely. Very quickly, a chart can become very sensitive.
yeah.
Wow.
Because you can see so many things in a chart. I mean, we did multiple readings with you, and I think we can do 100 more. So, how do you then decide or discern between what you do and do not share when someone asks a question?
I think some of that comes natural almost, you know. The key thing there is they're asking a question. So part of like having bedside manners, it's not like we see some combination and we just, you know, put that story onto the client. The question has to be there, I think. There has to be, hey, how about that? And then we open up that door. Other times, if there are certain things, there might be, you know, asking and hinting towards something and seeing what comes from that. Another thing is that one has to consider the Kala Desha Patra, the time, the place, and the vessel. So what is the culture that they're coming from? How old are they? You know, someone who's 90 years old, we're not going to talk so much about marriage, right? That is most likely something that I've finished with. Young people, then it becomes about education and career alignment, etc. And then I also might do a prashna, a question chart, right? So maybe not the client asking a question, but I'm asking the question and putting up a chart for seeing what to focus on. What day are they coming and what's happening, and seeing if those are topics that are relevant to the client.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
so beautiful. The birth of the question, right? We can
Yeah.
pull apart for that too. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, how do you incorporate Jyotish in your life? What role does it play in your life? Like, practically, does it influence your routines, your partnerships, business-wise, romantically? Do you look
Yeah.
at people's charts before you get involved with them?
I do too, and it's been a journey for sure. Sometimes I like to think of that we're born with, we have a vehicle, and to fully accept that in myself and in others and supporting that, you know. So yeah, partnerships in different forms. And I have a teenage son, so I will look at his chart and do my best to both give space, but also hint towards, hey, are you interested in these things? That might be, you know, choosing navigation of education and career that could be supportive, but to allow the person to also find their way within, you know, giving that type of freedom. I think for me, the certain seasons that I go through myself, that I do, for me, has always been pilgrimage too. That has been a huge thing. Like, that's actually one of the magics of astrology. I remember one time in India, I was sharing with my teacher there, and it's not that common for a foreigner to have gone through certain temples that I've gone through, completed 12 of the Jyotirlingas, and they kind of looked at me like, wow, that's, and she just clicked into it right away. You must have your Atma Karaka connected to the 10th Lord of the Navamsa. And I never heard about that combination before. But
Wow.
it's so specific, you know, so specific. And it took me a moment to, my Navamsa is the, yeah, you're right. So, you know, what is free will and what is choice? So so my travels in India and different temples, that has been magic. And that really has been my personal experience of catching a wave, using my own chart as best as I can, seeing the cycles that I'm in, seeing the transits, and going on a pilgrimage. And that sets up a type of energy that sometimes it's been magic, just been taken and carried, you know, like meeting families of Indians who are like, hey, you want to come with us to this temple? We're going to drive all night and go there, and being taken to places that I had forgotten, or things that, you know, that, yeah, really magical, really magical. So that, yeah, how do I use it? For alignment, always for alignment.
So I think a lot of times when you meet people and you read their charts, you actually have to pull them into alignment, really, right? Because we're so used to living out of alignment with ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how, what do you look at? Like, when people come for a reading, they learn about, you know, their vehicle, their body, like the way they are built, maybe the way they move through life, how their mind works. Like, what does that mean, looking at someone's nature?
Sometimes the best compliment is when people say that there's like in confirming what they already had a hunch about. I think we are born with patterns. I don't think we're born as blank slates. And a lot of times we see that in kids. Wow, they really gravitate towards this or that. And I think we have that natural intelligence with us. But we lose it a bit and we get educated and get influenced and get a bit lost. But that inner voice of, hey, I really like this, and maybe I have a talent in that, and, you know, supporting that. And yeah, like I said, when people are like getting that recognition from themselves, trusting that more, and it's reflected by a chart, basically. That is, I think, alignment. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think also, like you said, like the transits and how you use it, I think it's very helpful for people to know, like, what waves they have to catch, right? So it's not like blindly like navigating through life, like, oh, maybe I should do this or that, but you really see, like, oh, this is the dasha, the chapter I'm in, and this is how the planets are supporting me or perhaps blocking my way
or challenging me.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like what my Nidra teacher always says, and it makes me laugh so hard, that they also have a lot of people that say, yeah, I just go with the flow. And then she says, yeah, but there's also a lot of Vata people that are just like, oh, I go with the flow. But are you really going with the flow? Or are you just cannot make up your mind and you just do anything that comes across? Yeah.
Yeah. Dasha is amazing for supporting people through certain cycles. And yeah, and transits like Sadasati and these things that, you know, people are, oh, it's coming, that winter is coming to an end, right? And again, you know, knowing about these things ahead of time, it's nature. So we've lived enough. We know that, okay, it's turning into winter. It's getting colder. Oh, it's coming to the peak. Oh, okay, so now it's getting warmer. Spring is coming. That can you imagine? And the same thing in astrology is like, but we don't know that those cycles are there, because there might be everyone else is living in summer, but suddenly we have a few years of winter. And when people start to think, is it always going to be like this? Is this, you know, how life is? And to know ahead of time that it's coming, aligning to the best use of that, and sometimes meeting people who are in the midst or towards the end of it, giving that kind of support that hang in there. You got 6 more months to go, and then things are shifting, and then you're moving into summer again.
But what then if you have a reading and you see that someone's going to start their 19-year cycle of Rahu? What do you say then?
Or Saturn?
It all depends on how it's placed, right? So some people will shine and be amazing and come into great power and riches, or maybe even spirituality. It really depends.
Yeah.
It really depends. If it's, I guess what you're saying, if it's going to be a very
bumpy ride,
stormy winter, bumpy, difficult cycle, yeah, then packing the bag as best as we can and knowing that it is a journey. And then there's a saying in Norwegian, there is no such thing as bad weather. There's only bad clothing or bad outfits.
Yeah.
You know?
We say that in the Netherlands too.
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a Northern European story.
Where the dogs, yeah.
And there's always something that's useful for something. You know, it's not like, is the winter bad? No, is it rain or sunshine? We need both. And every life will have both. So maybe there are things that can be, sunshine sounds great, especially when we're from a Northern European culture, but sun can be very harsh and cruel and burning us. So people who live in, the hot desert area, then it's like, oh my God, it's going to be sunny all day. That's horrible. We want rain, right? So for whom and when is always the case. But yeah, if there is a difficult journey ahead, then there might be useful to give hints towards that, and then giving the if it gets difficult in this cycle a few years from now, then that is expected, and seek out someone who can do certain readings and give certain remedies, and seeing what the best use of that cycle is. Yeah.
So if you look at people, do you see people or do you see planets?
There are sometimes I have clients and I remember the chart more than the person. Because that's what I'm looking at, right? That's more what I would look mostly at.
It's also because when we are like looking at people, we only see doshas and planets. Yeah, our filter
Yeah.
is
But
completely.
maybe we are still in the very beginning of the study, so we are like these crazy Mercury students, right? So it
Yeah.
becomes very.
We just see it everywhere. We see it on TV.
Yeah,
We
we
see it
cannot.
in clothing. We see it everywhere. We see it, someone old walking the street with a stick. We're like, oh, look at
The
Saturn
Saturn.
going. Yeah.
That is the way to look through those glasses, those lenses. What I prefer to, when I look at people, I prefer to see that is part of consciousness. That is part of divine nature. That is a part of spark of light that is living through in different forms in everyone. And everyone has that light, that pure light, and it's filtered and layered in many ways that's unique to that person. That's my preferred way.
So how then do you look at yourself? Like you said, your Rahu is your like your Ammakataka, and your other like what planets are doing like good stuff for you, or maybe made it very difficult for you?
Not to make light out of it, but I would like to think that ultimately they're all doing good stuff. They're all teachers. They're all helping us. Even Saturn, is a great teacher of Dharma. How do I look at myself? Again, it's about alignment and trust and finding the best use of those qualities. They're all divine. There's from one level, yes, from the human level, we joke a bit about these planets and that, and at the same time, they're all part of light. Seven colors of the rainbow. Which one is better and worse? They all have different frequencies, and accepting the lessons, the teachings that they bring, and doing the best to polish so they can shine better. Yeah.
Because like we learn in your classes to almost see them as characters, as personalities, all these different planets and the flavors and the qualities and the lessons they bring us, almost like you're sitting across the table with Rahu, or you're like chanting with Saturn. I don't know, but that's something completely different than also what's actually happening above our heads. Like how can you make people connect with that as well? Because in the end it's great, all the stories, but it's also literally happening up there.
Yeah, there's astronomy, right? It's a true science and physical reality of planets. So it's more of what those planets represent. It's more of what they mean. And that's part of the difficulty of trying to bridge stories and this astrology into astronomy. From a Western perspective, that is completely two different directions. In the ancient world, that is not a different study. It's the same study, astronomy and astrology. And I think we lost touch with the story as the stories and the myth. That was part of old European culture. Every culture had teaching tales. And there's a lot of wisdom in old German and Northern European stories. A lot of teaching of inner psychology, and I think that is the like psychology has replaced that a bit, but learning about the transpersonal mythological stories that every culture would have would teach us about different aspects of life.
Yeah, I think also even in Western psychology, you have it too, but it's more in the form of archetypes and symbolic language. If you look at Jungian psychology, so it is there, but it's not a part of our daily lives anymore. You know, when you used to go to bed, sit by the fire and telling stories that would go from generation to generation. And it's so beautiful because a lot of the teachings I still remember through the stories. It's the stories that stick.
And that's why it's so interesting living in this time and age, because Ayurveda and Jyotish, they all come from this oral tradition, stories like, as I learned from other teachers, like they had to walk miles to see their guru, their teacher, to get some of the stories. And nowadays, everything is like online and social media, and it becomes harder and harder to actually know what is real and what is not, and like what is the truth in this. And even for us students, you know, you have to use your discernment so strongly. And often I also get like, we get clients for Ayurveda Jyotish, and you know, they come with stories, and you go like, but where did you find this? Like, where is this coming from? Because that's not actually Ayurveda, or so it's quite a challenge in these days.
Especially now, because it's becoming more and more popular. But also when we are want to know something, I'm like, I'm not gonna Google it. I only trust Shivananda and maybe a few other people, but otherwise,
Yeah, you have to be very critical also about what is being taught to you, who are your teachers, what resonates with you, and like how is that for you as well? Like what is
That is the danger, I think, of very quick, pop culture, and of course yoga is way more than the physical practice, right? So already there, it's been, what is the definition in a Western setting of going to a yoga class? So it can be a bit, I don't know if it's frustrating. I think I'm beyond that. I'm not frustrated that more, but when it's criticized, then I get frustrated, because then it becomes like, if someone is criticizing yoga, then they're criticizing most likely what they know as stretching and maybe some breath stuff. But it's way more than that, right? I'm a foreigner, and when I sit with my teachers in India and seeing how big their stories, how epic their sagas are, and how deeply that's it's even, the more I study, the more I recognize there's even more and more I don't know, that I didn't even knew about, and how deep that goes. So I still feel like I'm scratching the surface.
It feels like you're endlessly scratching the surface because there's more and more and more and more, and you go like, what?
Yeah, every Sunday we're like, what? Another perspective, another technique. Wait,
It's like
wait.
really like the fish in the, you know, the Pisces
The
fish in the
Pisces,
ocean. Like
in the
it's
ocean.
endless.
Infinite.
It is infinite. It's a huge ocean, absolutely.
So maybe a final question. For all the people who choose not to believe in astrology and say that the influence of the planets is just
Bullshit.
bullshit and karma is a bitch. What would you say to them? Why would it be interesting maybe for people to do like a Jyotish reading? You know, what would you say to them? Because we try to explain it, but maybe you can explain it way better than
And
we
it's not
can.
so much about like convincing people why this
No.
is the truth or the only truth or why it works or not, because that's not the point, but
No.
it's like the beauty and the incredible wisdom that's behind this. And even though you choose to believe, that's the thing, it's a choice. Do you believe it? Like Kuhn, one of my teachers and who was also a co-student of you back then, he said like you can believe in it or not, but it works. This is just how nature works. So yeah, it doesn't matter in the end whether you believe it.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. So yeah, absolutely. It's not about convincing anyone.
No.
I believe that there has to be an openness in the question. So if someone is already coming with the idea of it doesn't work, then and they don't, and they say they don't want to believe in it, I usually say, me too. I'm an open-minded skeptic, beginner, curious, and just testing what works. And if it works, then it works. And I don't need to have it working 100% of the time, you know? If someone has an amazing tool for investment and they're making it happen, making it rain 80% of the time, you know, that is a master in investment. So it's not this idea of believing it. It's, hey, this seems to work, and it seems to work quite a lot for me. If you have a better system, if you have another way, please show me. I'm happy to look into that. I see a book behind you. I believe it is The Greatness of Saturn. Yeah. Right?
Always there.
Yeah. So I think that is, you know, when people go through cycles and they get a bit stronger lessons of this and that, and then they might start to question. So I think the planets will teach us what we need to learn. And especially when, you know, people come to, sometimes they come to holistic health as the final resort. They tried everything else. They have to go the long journey and find something else because what they knew didn't work anymore. So many people come to astrology for the same reasons. It's like people come to it, like the profession of astrology in India is kind of similar to both doctors and lawyers. When people need that kind of support, then they go. So if you don't believe in it, then your life is going great, no problem, right? And at the same time, if especially with this idea of prevention is better than curing, then it might be good to go to holistic health even when things are great, to just make sure that one can maintain that and learn about one's own nature and health and getting that support in alignment. So same thing in astrology. Of people usually come when they're making decisions, right? They come when they're in a phase of something that they knew, and now they're uncertain and they're having choices of where to go. And I think it's natural for humans to look to the stars for navigation. I think we've done that since the first day, in the first night. We find patterns in nature. We find patterns in ourselves, and to get confirmation of that can be supportive.
It was very beautiful. What was stuck in my mind from class yesterday, you were talking about the pendulum going back and forth. You know, if we look in time and years back, we go from the very hippie to, you know, it goes all back and forth. But it must include the past as well. I think you said something like that. Like, we're in this Rahu time. We can go way forward, but we must include also.
I can't remember who said that. Maybe it was Jung, but there's something along the lines of that a true change, a true revolution has to include all previous revolutions. So there has to be, there has to be an integration of that.
In order to really evolve. Yeah.
Yeah, to evolve, yeah.
I mean, that's often the natural order of life, right? To include all and not just pick out the diamonds, the things we just want to see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's not about convincing anyone. That would be, I think, a waste of time.
Giving them a different perspective, a different.
But you know, as simple as it sounds, it is. Astrology and astronomy go together, so it's not that different than predicting that, hey, the winter is coming, and most likely, in the northern climates, people are not going to be as active outdoor, you will see less. It's like a natural movement of nature. And especially if people can start to integrate either experiencing it or just accepting that nature has profound effects, the sun and the moon on daily and monthly cycles, it really moves them, the oceans, right? It is high tide and low tide, and the difficulty is that we become very distant from that direct experience of nature. So then it becomes, and I will even say that it even a little bit of my own, maybe it's a misunderstanding of Western astrology, You know, there's a lot of posting of this transit and that transit, and now it's a full moon in this and that sign, but how many people actually go out and directly experience that instead of it becoming a mental fabrication and a story of, oh my God, it's this and that, and that is the pseudoscience, maybe when we take a concept and we make it a belief and therefore we're experiencing that. Whereas I think the Indian tradition of direct experience of being a yogi and testing it out and having one's own realization is way more important than taking on someone else's beliefs.
Experience is your guru.
So the direct experience, then that is always the first deepest source of knowledge. The teaching, the textbooks, they're amazing, but direct experience is possible.
But
Even in astrology, yeah.
it can be confusing living in these Rahuvian times, right? I mean, it's interesting that all these ancient teachings are coming back. People seem to gravitate towards it more and more, like Ayurveda and Jyotish, and who knows Vastu. But we're also living in Rahuvian times, which is all about illusion and confusion and not knowing what is real. And these two, it's so interesting.
Kali Yuga is dark, so you know, who knows what really was in the ancient days. But yeah, there are the cycles that are described is that we are living in a bit of dark times. And from the big perspective, there is consciousness, there is light, there is understanding, and how the human mind is filtering that is, it is a bit painful to see. And we're living in very quick times. Maybe I'm getting older, and like all the old people are saying, things are so fast, but it becomes sound bites, you know, quick TikTok and these quick messages, and don't think that is supportive of real deeper connection and understanding. It's
What is the best advice ever given to you in this context?
find what you really love, what you love doing, and do a lot of that.
Any final advice for us or the people all listening?
Find what you love doing and do a lot of that.
Yeah, we are doing that.
Yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
And we're going to do it even more. So that's a little cliffhanger for the listeners. Well, thank you so much, Shivananda, for spending your time with us on the
My
podcast.
pleasure. My
Yeah.
pleasure.
And I'm sure you will return as a guest because there are so many interesting topics that we can share with our listeners. And it's way more interesting if they hear it from you instead of us translating it again.
Yeah.
So yeah, thank you so
Yeah,
much.
thank you. It's been wonderful again to yeah. We could talk endless and have so many questions, but we gotta draw the line somewhere. Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to this podcast. Are you feeling lost in space? Book your consultation now to find out more about your astral passport and unique cosmic X-ray. Also, feel free to send us suggestions or questions anytime through Instagram or email. Or keep on spacing in this wonderful universe just a little bit longer. See you the next one. I'm gonna say